Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Lawrence Jacobs, who is the Walter F. and Joan Mondale Chair of Political Studies at the University of Minnesota, where he also directs the Center for the Study of Politics and Governance at the Hubert H. Humphrey School of Political Affairs. His books include The Unsustainable American State, Talking Together, Public Deliberation in America and the Search for Community, and Class War Question, Economic Inequality and the American Dream. Welcome to Background Briefing, Lawrence Jacobs.
Good to be with you again.
And today in Minnesota and Colorado, there are caucuses, and of course there's a non-binding primary in Missouri, which doesn't have Gingrich on the ballot. But in your state, Minnesota, at this point, obviously the polls are just closing, that the Democratic-affiliated public policy polling, the PPP, suggests Rick Santorum may have a strong showing in both Minnesota and Colorado. What's your sense there on the ground, Lawrence Jacobs?
It looks as if Santorum has really picked up support in the conservative base of the Republican Party. Over the last few decades, there has been an internal civil war within the Minnesota Republican Party, as in other states. And the evangelical, the Tea Party, conservative populists, and the libertarians have put an enormous amount of pressure on the establishment and the kind of Republicans that focused on winning general elections. Santorum is tapping into that insurgent ascendance.
So is that to say that if Michelle Bachmann were still in the race, the home girl, if you will, or the hometown girl, would she be picking up that same vote? Is that the vote that she also identified?
Exactly. Michelle Bachmann very much reflected this conservative insurgency in the Minnesota Republican Party. It helps to explain her rise and her ability to remain the leading voice of conservatives in Minnesota. Probably Bachmann reflects better the Minnesota Republican Party than Tim Pawlenty.
And Tim Pawlenty, of course, is a pretty active surrogate for Mitt Romney, is he not?
He is. Tim Pawlenty, very effective as a governor and winning statewide election, did have trouble with the Republican Party activists who were fairly conservative, felt that Pawlenty was not stiff enough in rejecting increased spending and revenue hikes. It's probably worth noting as a footnote that Tim Pawlenty set the record for the number of vetoes. So he was conservative enough, just not enough for the conservative insurgents who now probably have the upper hand in the Minnesota Republican Party and will be playing a major role in the and have been playing a major role in the Minnesota caucuses today.
And Lawrence Jacobs, just to go back a little bit, when Pawlenty was running for the nomination, he was considered something of a favorite. In the first debate, he kind of piked out on taking on Romney and was criticized for sort of wimping out. Conspiratorial minds might wondering what's happening now. He gave Romney a pass, and now he's become Romney's surrogate. So is he angling for a cabinet post?
You know, that's always speculation. It's hard to say. I think probably at heart, Tim Pawlenty agreed with Romney on some issues. They clearly had some differences, which explains why Pawlenty, went ahead and made a pretty vigorous campaign, even though he departed early.
I see. So, again, I'm speaking with Lawrence Jacobs, who's the Walter F. and Joan Mondale Chair of Political Studies at the University of Minnesota, where he also directs the Center for the Study of Politics and Governance at the Hubert H. Humphrey School of Political Affairs. So, what's going on with the Republican Party in general in terms of these primaries? It's just been such a seesaw from the beginning, and so many, almost every one of the candidates has had their moment in the sun and then flamed out. But the sort of seesawing continues.
It sure does, and I think it reflects the fact that the Republican Party is very much up for grabs. There is a longstanding establishment associated with the business sector that focused also on how do you win elections. Romney is their candidate. But there has been a very real and very significant upsurge of these philosophical conservatives. It's the evangelicals, the Tea Partiers, conservative populists, the libertarians. And for them, winning elections is important, but standing for principle is more important. And every time it looks as if Romney's got momentum, we see, as we did in South Carolina, and I think as we're going to see today in Colorado and Minnesota, that the conservative populace have risen up and reminded Pawlenty that the Republican Party is no longer the party of his father or even the party that Romney hopes to lead.
And Pawlenty has actually come out pretty strong against Santorum, hasn't he, clearly on Romney's behalf?
Well, Tim Pawlenty certainly has a strong base of support and an organizational might in Minnesota that he is loaning to Mitt Romney, and as part of that, he's taken on Santorum. But what I would tell you about that is the ferocity of the attack that's now started on Santorum reflects the level of concern within the Romney camp. For a while, Romney was ignoring his opponents in the Republican Party and aiming strictly on Barack Obama. Now he realizes that his candidacy is really under threat. If Santorum or Gingrich were to drop out, Romney would have a very serious problem on his hand because the conservatives are going to mobilize around one candidate, whether it's Santorum or Gingrich, and Romney may well find himself in the losing end of a number of the state primaries and caucuses.
Well, that's pretty much Gingrich's strategy, isn't it? I mean, he's a one-man show. He has no organization. He has less money than Santorum, but he's going to stay in there as long as he can afford the airfare, right? Until
it's true, but the question, I think, is very much out there, whether Gingrich is really going to have what it takes to remain a factor. And as I've watched him campaigning in Minnesota, he looks surprisingly flat. And it may reflect some real inner turmoil that he's facing. And, you know, if Santorum has a very good night tonight, it could be part of the kind of downfall of Newt Gingrich's campaign.
Well, I thought Newt Gingrich was counting on Super Tuesday in Georgia.
He's talking about that. And, of course, Georgia is his home state. So, like New Hampshire for Romney, I don't think a whole lot of folks are going to put a whole lot of stock in Georgia. We could be moving through Super Tuesday with Newt Gingrich not having carried a state other than his home state.
And South Carolina,
of course.
Yeah. So, Lawrence Jacobs, given that both these states today, at least two out of the three, Colorado and Minnesota, your state, are trending, shall we say, to Santorum because of the religious right, you know, influence in the state party, what about the subtext there in so much of what's going on in the religious right in terms of their leeriness or wariness of Romney? Much is said that he's, you know, as Gingrich has tried to frame him as a Massachusetts moderate, but there's also a religious subtext, surely, about Mormonism.
Absolutely. This has been something that's been kept off center stage. But for many evangelicals, there is a fairly serious theological difference over kind of the major questions of the Eucharist and other issues. And for them, Romney is really not acceptable. I think the roosters are coming home here in that the Republican Party is so far to the right of mainstream America, and we're seeing Romney's kind of heroic effort to stake out a middle ground to run a strong general election campaign against Barack Obama being whittled away. Romney himself has seen his negative ratings soar as Gingrich has ripped him apart. And now we're going to see, I think, Romney having to move even more conservative to take on Santorum if he does as well as it appears at the moment today.
And why do these conservative Protestant voters, what is it about Santorum they find acceptable, given that he's, you know, a Catholic fundamentalist, if you will, or at least a very conservative Catholic? Is this just the lesser of the two evils, Catholicism versus Mormonism?
Yeah, I think there's much more tolerance within the evangelical world for different views of Christianity. Mormonism is really outside the orbit. And so I don't know if lesser two evils, it's just there's more affinity. And clearly Catholicism is recognized as within the family of Christianity, whereas Mormonism is not. But again, the key fact here is that the overriding story about Romney's inevitability and the growing momentum coming out of Florida and Nevada has been dealt, it appears, a strong blow today in Colorado and Minnesota, perhaps. And so this is now going to raise more questions about the Romney campaign and whether he can truly lock this up, or if we're looking at a pretty tough battle that could stretch into March and, you know, perhaps later than that.
Well, it's not just Romney, though, surely, Lawrence Jacobs. Isn't he? He has the Republican establishment behind him, right? The more pragmatic wing of the party, if you will, the ones that are looking towards the general election, not the ideologically pure Tea Party crowd who are, you know, running on their passions.
Yes, that's absolutely right. That Romney is representing a wing of the Republican Party, the establishment wing. He represents also the more pragmatic business base of the Republican Party that's looking for lower regulations and taxes and spending that's kind of pulled back from Social Security and Medicare and health reform. And to that extent, Romney really stands for a particular style of mainstream establishment Republican Partyism that is under assault within the Republican Party by this insurgent conservative force. They appear to be the winners today.
Well, they've been written off, though, before today. So I guess what you're telling us, Lawrence Jacobs, is that the announcement of their death is premature, that the Tea Party is still alive.
It's absolutely still alive. And I think the key issue as we move through today, but then into the other states in the coming weeks, will be the composition of the states. The more moderate states in terms of the Republican Party will be more friendly to Romney, but the more conservative states in the Southwest and in the South and parts of the North, as we're seeing in Minnesota, are going to present a great challenge for Mitt Romney. He does not have the nomination locked up despite the media drumbeat to the contrary.
Well, just in closing, Lawrence Jacobs, does this then say that Barack Obama is one of the luckiest politicians on the face of the earth? He ran against Alan Keyes, an eccentric candidate for Senate, and whipped him. He ran against McCain, who was, you know, less than exciting candidate who the economy crashed on his head towards the end. And you think he's going to get pretty much a free pass here this time around because of this fratricide on the Republican side?
Well, it's not going to be a free pass. This is going to be a very intense election. And I think there's, there'll be quite a probability that Obama could lose re-election. But there's no doubt this is one of the most friendly scenarios for the White House. You remember back in the fall, they were actually weighing in trying to damage Romney, assuming he was going to be the candidate and wanting to ding him up. And then I think they've more or less sat back, realizing that Gingrich was doing their work for them much more effectively than they could have. Again, the negative perceptions that Americans have of Romney has really risen rapidly as Gingrich's campaign took off. But now we're looking at what I think will be a much more drawn-out a battle for the Republican nomination that was anticipated even a week ago. And that is going to drain Republican money. It's going to ding up whoever emerges as the candidate. And if it's Romney, he's going to be even weaker. So this is, for the Obama campaign, it's good news. They're going to face a candidate who is diminished and will have a hard time moving back to the center when it comes time to general election. It'll be easier for Barack Obama to frame a choice between himself and a Republican Party that is too far to the right.
Well, just to pick up on something as we close, Lawrence Jacobs, you were saying that it would be close, but Obama's lucky because of what's happening on the Republican side. What's your analysis of why it will be close?
Well, the fact that you have so many Americans who are struggling to keep their homes, who have lost their jobs or are underemployed is just the cloud that is haunting President Obama. He obviously has had some better economic news recently. If that continues, it clearly is going to help him. But it's certainly quite possible that we're going to see some unfavorable job numbers in the coming months or more stagnation in the housing markets. There are many Americans who have a quite sour view of the president's handling of the economy. And for folks, that is the number one issue heading into the election. So if this were a straight-up referendum on Barack Obama's handling of the economy, he could well face defeat. Now, if the economy improves and continues to improve as it has been, I think he'll have a much better shot at withstanding that. But if we see some bad job numbers coming in the next couple months, that's going to hurt him a lot. So having a Republican candidate who's going to be less than attractive is going to provide yet another opportunity for the president to frame this election not as a referendum, are you better now than 4 years ago, but as a choice between the known, if less than adored, Obama presidency and the unknown and perhaps frightful Republican alternative. That's what the White House wants to set up in this long, drawn-out, and quite brutal battle for the Republican nomination is playing into Obama's hands.
I thank you so much for joining us here today, Lawrence Jacobs.
Good to be with you.
Again, I've been speaking with Lawrence Jacobs, who is the Walter F. and Joan Mondale Chair for Political Studies at the University of Minnesota, where he also directs the Center for the Study of Politics and Governance at the Hubert H. Humphrey School of Political Affairs. His books include The Unsustainable American State, Talking Together, Public Deliberation in America and the Search for Community, and Class War Question, Economic Inequality and the American Dream. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about who's in charge in Iran.